Welcome to the Blood Cancer Experience, a podcast by the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society of Canada. This podcast connects people affected by a blood cancer to resources that inform, support, educate, and empower. When it comes to cancer, it's hard to navigate the unknown, and there are no easy answers. We're here to bring you the information you need to help you make sense of every step of the blood cancer experience. My name is Caroline Mitchell, and I am the Community Services Manager, part of the Ontario Regional Team for the LLSC. Today on the show, I'm talking about cancer-related distress with Margot Kennedy. Cancer-related distress is common when someone is newly diagnosed, in treatment, or managing survivorship issues. Margot is here to talk to us from the Princess Margaret Hospital in her role as an outpatient social worker. Thank you, Margot, for joining us today.
Great. Thank you for the invitation. It's a pleasure to be here.
Wonderful to have you here. Can you talk about the ways that having cancer can impact someone's mental health?
Yeah, definitely. So, you know, I think often we sort of hear these terms thrown out there about mental health and mental illness, and I really do like that term, cancer-related distress. And I think the term really encompasses a lot of stress and distress that can include cognitive, behavioral, emotional aspects, as well as social and spiritual elements that can interfere with the ability to cope effectively with cancer, with any cancer diagnosis and treatment. The impact can be very broad, far-reaching, and diverse. I think many people feel, especially initially, a great deal of fear, anxiety, absolutely terrified, anger, shock, despair, all of these very intense and very uncomfortable and distressful emotions commonly come up. If we think about the treatment for this disease site that includes leukemia, lymphoma, and myeloma, the treatment and the protocols are often quite extreme. They can involve very long, very aggressive chemotherapies, extended stays in hospitals. They can include radiation, chemotherapy, surgery, and it can have a really, really big impact on people going through this kind of devastating treatment. And I think there'd be something highly unusual if people didn't have distress or didn't, you know, really react. So it's very, very common, very normal, expected, and predictable. And, you know, for everybody, the experience is different. You know, I bet many of your listeners can relate to, you know, story, their own experience or stories they hear from other people about, you know, the first time they heard a doctor use the word cancer, you know, at that point they just shut down and they didn't hear one other word the doctor said. And, you know, understandably so, you know, that's just how devastating the impact is. It can totally stop you in your tracks and completely paralyze you. And, you know, this can be difficult because then, you know, you might miss out on some really important information that your medical team is telling you, you know, about your diagnosis and about your treatment plan. And that very information, you know, is sometimes the information that can help you to feel a little bit more in control. So, you know, it can be really, really challenging. I think very often too, you know, after people work through that first initial, you know, diagnosis period, then they're really concerned about, you know, how they're going to tell maybe their partner, their family, their children, their employer, their friends. You know, that can be a real challenge, as well as thinking about all the practical issues that now have to be considered. You know, like, what am I going to do about my income support? Do I have drug coverage? How am I going to get to appointments? And so many worries and questions too about the whole medical, you know, treatment piece. You know, what does this treatment look like? What are all the details? How is it going to impact on me? Is the treatment going to work? What's going to happen if it doesn't work? Then what? Just lots and lots of unknowns to deal with and struggle with.
So there's many experiences that people may face when they've received a new diagnosis. So you talked a little bit about some of the common cancer-related distresses. So what would you say are some common cancer-related concerns for cancer survivors?
I think a lot of cancer survivors go through, really different emotions that can increase in intensity and then settle down a little bit. And sometimes, just when you think you've dealt with them, you feel them coming back around again. So one example might be in grieving some of the losses and changes. So initially, when you're diagnosed, you might be grieving your loss of income and, not going to work anymore and seeing your colleagues. And sometimes, as time goes along too, you can also start to realize that so many of your relationships in your life and your world have changed. That you might have friends, let's say, who just don't seem to know what to say and how to support you, and they've never gone through cancer, and they're just, you feel, maybe disappointed that they're not here for you. Grieving some of the maybe the life goals that have just come to a stop, at least for now, whether it's about school, whether it's regarding children, or maybe looking for a house and starting a family and a career, planning retirement, all different things depending on your life stage can involve losses and big changes.
We hear a little bit about survivorship guilt. Is that something that you hear a fair bit about?
Yeah, for sure, absolutely. I think there's so many unpredictable things that can happen, and everyone's, illness is different and their outcomes are very different. And I've had many patients who've talked about, making friends with people maybe in the hospital, maybe a roommate, and their roommate having some very different outcomes than what they have. So they may feel quite guilty that, treatment got their illness into a remission, or that they did so well. Meanwhile, their close friend really struggled. Guilt can also be, just feeling guilty that, you're not able to maybe financially contribute to your household in the way that you used to, or you're not able to be there for your kids and have the energy to kind of play with them and go to their baseball games and school things.
Can you talk specifically about concerns related to anxiety and fear of relapse among cancer survivors? I know this is one of kind of a primary concern for many survivors.
That's right. That can be like a very, very big concern. And it makes a lot of sense, especially, people who've gone through an initial round of treatment, or kind of several rounds of treatment, and now they're doing really well, and the medical team is just following, observing, and hoping they're going to keep doing well. After going through that, it can be really such a devastatingly difficult, horrendous, hellish experience that no wonder people are thinking, oh my goodness, I could never do this again. I don't think I could. I don't want to do it again. And feeling a lot of anxiety that, what if this remission doesn't stay and I have to have more treatment? What's that going to mean? So that's a very, very understandable, fear and concern. That a lot of people really struggle with coming to terms with and have to work really hard at finding a way to sort of manage that.
Thank you. What are some treatments that could help someone experiencing these types of cancer-related distress concerns?
I think some of the things that can be very, very helpful as well, but also maybe a little bit more challenging, are the pieces around, ensuring that you get the support that you need, and finding ways to express emotions. So in terms of dealing with these very kind of intense, distressing emotions, a lot of experts talk about the three different domains or systems that we use to manage our emotions. So we can think about three circles. So one of them is our threat system. So that's the flashing little red light and alarm bells start ringing when there's danger, when there's a threat, and we need to go into flight or fight mode. We need to protect ourselves and just really be safe and survive this. So that system is very, very important, along with another system that's called our drive system. So that's more of our kind of functioning and problem solving. So when there's a really intense emotion, that system might come into play and try lots of problem solving, collecting facts, focus on goals, really try to sort of accomplish things to address the problem. The third domain is our soothing system. So that's our system that tells us to slow down, to try to be calm, to rest, to try to digest and process what's happening, to find ways to be emotionally safe. It's very sort of nurturing and very caring. So all three of these domains, the threat system, the drive system, and the soothing system, they're all very important. They all have a very important function and purpose. But I think the key in managing distress well is to find a balance between all three of these systems so that they're somewhat equal. So the circles are all the same size. I think for many of us, we find that when we're faced with intense, uncomfortable, distressing emotions, it's really the threat system and the drive system that come into play the most, and our soothing system might be the smallest, least developed circle that we're relying on. So sometimes finding ways to really notice and build up our coping and our resources around soothing, relaxing activities can be really helpful. So in terms of improving our distress, often people tell us too that one of the secrets is to try to be present in the moment and to try a balance of activities that are both, you know, distracting and that are both soothing. So distracting activities can be anything from going for a walk, maybe focusing on some tasks that need to be done, like cleaning or vacuuming or gardening. It can be watching a favorite movie, reading a book, doing a puzzle, doing something kind for somebody else. A lot of things that just can sort of keep us busy and keep our mind off of our worries. The distraction can really work by giving us a nice break from this emotional intensity. So distraction is actually very busy than an activity that its purpose is to avoid, escape, and just sort of numb from distress. So that might be things like using drugs or alcohol to try to just stop those feelings. So there's the distracting things and then balancing those with the soothing activities. So that's having like a lovely meal, listening to relaxing music, enjoying the sounds of nature, having a lovely long bath or shower with candles, meditating, spending some time focusing on positive aspects in your life and things that you can control, breathing exercises, all those different things that we do to kind of soothe and nurture ourselves. So these are sort of some of the suggestions that can help us deal with that whole kind of emotional distress piece. Mm-hmm. And on one hand, it sounds simple again, but actually, I think a lot of us can get really stuck on this in that we often can't even really recognize, name, or identify these really strong emotions that are, you know, causing us, you know, so much upset. We just haven't had sort of a lot of practice in really being able to name that emotion, to just sort of sit with the sensations that it brings, to just sort of allow that emotion to kind of stay and to look at it without any kind of judgment. To kind of step back and think, so what is this emotion telling me? And then when we know what we need, we can then look at our coping list and try to find some activities that match that need.
That makes absolute sense. Thank you for sharing the distracting and soothing activities. I think those are great ways to cope, whether you've had cancer or whether you're just struggling with something difficult in your life. I think they're great tips for people to use. Do you have other suggestions for coping mechanisms that people could use along with those distraction and soothing activities?
Everybody's different and has different needs. And sometimes people are faced with a challenge where I can think of this one young man who, before his diagnosis, I believe he was a competitive bike rider. So he rode in a lot of races and he trained all the time. And, his life really revolved around his bike. And that was his number one coping. And for various medical reasons, the team advised him to take a break from riding his bike just because of some dizziness and balance issues he was having. And he had to stop doing that. And it made me realize how challenging it can be when we rely on a very kind of physically kind of based coping that can be our sort of go-to thing, our stress relief, our little place just to forget about all of our worries, and just to get on that bike and just ride. How kind of wonderful that is. Just how hard it was to, when you're already so stressed, to start finding brand new coping mechanisms. So, that certainly can be a challenge, and it can be, I think, great to reach out and to talk to other people about some of their ideas, what worked, what helped for them. Being open to try new things and realize that, some of these things take a lot of practice and experience before you really start to feel the results and some relief.
Wonderful. How can family and friends support someone who is experiencing cancer-related stress?
I think it's one that sort of many patients and family and friends all struggle together around how to negotiate this. And, very often this is sort of a first time in sorting this out for everybody. And everybody's kind of feeling these distressful emotions. And sometimes, again, that guilt that patients feel starts to creep up and think, I shouldn't be asking so much from my family and friends. I should be more independent and be dealing with some of this on my own. So, sometimes what can really help family and friends is to just step back and to really listen and to really let the patient take the lead. Maybe to ask some questions, to explore, to ask about, what is kind of the most pressing thing that you're thinking about right now? To try to do lots and lots of validating and expressing empathy and concern and care. And it can be just sort of little things, just kind of sending a little email or text message, just taking that initiative and reaching out to show concern. Can be really important and help someone get through the day. Sometimes asking people for what they need and just really paying attention to communication, to not assuming. So, I can think of some patients who I've had who tell me that, oh my goodness, I've got this one buddy and all he wants to talk about the whole time we're together is cancer, cancer, cancer. And I can't stand it, and I just want our friendship to go back to normal and to be talking about, hockey or work or whatever. And then other patients tell me that, they might be in a situation where in their family, nobody ever says the C word. And it's almost like everybody's pretending this isn't happening. So, I think both of these are kind of extremes of the same situation, and that's really all around communication and just not assuming what the person needs.
What is one thing that you wish people knew about cancer-related distress concerns among cancer survivors?
Yeah, well, one thing that I think is really important for people to know is that you don't have to do this alone. There is a whole team at your hospital, at your cancer center, and there's the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society of Canada. There's a whole community here to support you. So all you have to do is reach out and ask for help, and that doesn't make you weak. It actually makes you someone who's very strong and takes initiative and is very resourceful. If you're not getting what you need from somebody or an organization or a healthcare team, it's okay to keep on asking and to go to other people to get your needs met. I think sometimes we expect that our partner or our closest loved ones are responsible for meeting all of our needs. And, you know, sometimes that's not always a realistic expectation. And it's okay to turn to other people, you know, to support us and meet some of those needs. I think that also leads to expectations. And that's another thing that I wish people knew from the get-go, is how to develop expectations that are going to work for them. And I think for many people, they're so hoping to move along with the recovery and the healing process that it's really hard not to put a lot of pressure on yourself and not to rush things and then feel disappointed. You know, to be patient with yourself and just take it really slowly, baby steps, and give yourself all the beautiful credit that you deserve for doing your best.
That's great advice. Are there any resources that you would recommend for people experiencing cancer-related distress?
Well, I think, first of all, I strongly recommend all of the resources that are provided by the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society of Canada. It's such an excellent resource, and the staff there are so helpful and so accommodating. In terms of managing cancer-related distress, there's really no right or wrong way to do this. There's no right or wrong way to feel. It's all a process. That being said, there are some circumstances when you definitely should reach out for help. So if you find that your distress is becoming significantly unmanageable, that you're experiencing excessive worries or sadness, and it's interfering with your daily functioning, activities, and relationships, definitely let your healthcare team know about these concerns. If you experience any sudden chest pain, shortness of breath, a fast heartbeat, call 911 or go to your local emergency department. Seek out medical help immediately. These kinds of symptoms may or may not be related to anxiety, and it's very important to have some medical investigations around these symptoms. If you feel like you can't cope and are thinking about harming yourself or others, call 911, go to your local emergency department, seek out medical help immediately. Remember, you don't have to do this alone. Support is available.
Thank you so much, Margot, for taking the time to talk to us today. If listeners have any questions about cancer-related distress or need support to navigate your experience, I encourage you to connect with the community services manager in your region. Visit llscanada.org to connect with us. Until next time, stay well.
Thank you for listening to the Blood Cancer Experience podcast series by the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society of Canada. You can find us wherever you access your favorite podcasts, so be sure to subscribe and leave us a review. If you have an idea for the show, we'd love to hear from you. Send us an email with your comments or suggestions to canadainfo@lls.org. The Leukemia and Lymphoma Society of Canada is dedicated to funding cutting-edge research and supporting people affected by blood cancers. To learn more and access resources including fact sheets, booklets, and webcasts, visit llscanada.org.